With infinite complacence, people went to and fro over the earth about their little affairs, serene in the assurance of their dominion over this small, spinning fragment of solar driftwood, which by chance or design, man has inherited out of the dark mystery of time and space.
Why don't you ask me what it feels like to be a freak?
The power of a new generation.
Greetings, and you are listening to Savage Science Radio here at Jackalope 105 FM, and I am your host, Tracy Savage. Let's have some tunes to get tonight started off just right.
Thank you.
rats. Rats are not usually the one thing that people want to hear that they have living in their house uninvited. Unless they're a pet, you more than likely don't want them around for a myriad of reasons. But tonight, we're going to devote a little bit of time to talking about rats and how they relate to us with medicine, our daily life, and what we have done to make them into something that we really need to worry about. With that being said, let's talk about genetic mutations. Now, genetic mutations have produced a new breed of super rat with DNA that protects the vermin from standard toxins, according to Professor Robert Smith at the University of Huddersfield. Rat catchers in Berkshire and Hampshire were the first to report that their poisons were no longer effective. Well, there goes that idea if you have too many of them, which experts put down to an increased immunity among the pests. But as the poison-resistant rats continue to spread, tests have revealed that they boast an entirely new strand of DNA, hello evolution, that wards off attacks from pesticides. Swindon in Wiltshire is the latest town to suffer from an infestation. Yes, I said infestation. Ew. Like a bad movie, with exterminators reporting a 500% increase in the rodents. Many are turning to traps, air rifles, and even dogs in an effort to keep the populations under control. Now, Professor Smith of the University's Applied Sciences Department warned that super rats may be thriving in communities across Britain. The government no longer provides funding to track resistance. Oh boy. There's more that funding problem that we've been talking about on this show. Important stuff like this, meaning the scale of the problem is unclear, and that's not really something you want to be in the dark about, right, so to speak. Natural selection means that when you have a rat population in your town, poison will kill the ones that aren't resistant, and the ones that survive may have the gene, and then they have babies who can receive the gene themselves, he said. There are mutations and changes in their DNA that alter the ability of rats to deal with these poisons. It appears to be moving west and has now been located in Swindon and Bristol. It's a warning of things to come. There are now thought to be around 80 million rats in Britain, a rise of more than 200%, since 2007 on this chart. Now, the National Pest Technician Association, yes, that would be the NPTA, has said that the scrapping of weekly bin collections in many councils has contributed to the explosion, with householders now keeping their rubbish bags outside for longer. The British Pest Control Association's BPCA is calling to go with the government to approve more powerful pesticides for use outdoors. Now, is that any better? If this report has any indication for the future, if they have more powerful pesticides coming out to kill the already resistant rats, doesn't that mean or stand to reason that natural selection will just allow them resistance to the stronger pesticide? And then we'll have super rats everywhere. Well, anyway, the BPCA is warning of a threat to public health if rat numbers swell over the summer, so we'll keep an eye on that. And with the bad news about rats, there's also good news because we use them to help in medicine research and other sorts of interesting scientific pursuits. Blueberries help rats build strong bones. Now listen to this. Compounds in blueberries might turn out to have a powerful effect on formation of strong, healthy bones if results from studies with laboratory rats turn out to hold true for humans. Jinran Chen and his colleagues are exploring this idea in research funded by the U.S. Department of Agriculture, or USDA, and the Arkansas Children's Nutritional Center, ACNC, in Little Rock. Chen is a principal investigator and lead scientist at the center's Skeletal Development Laboratory and an assistant professor in the Department of Pediatrics at the University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences, also located in Little Rock. Chen specializes in research on how what we eat during infancy, childhood, and early adulthood affects growth and development of bones and the risk of developing osteoporosis or other degenerative bone diseases in later years. Now, Chen's studies with young, rapidly growing laboratory rats suggests that polyphenols, the compounds that give blueberries their blue, purple, and red coloration, might aid in building strong bones. The work has paved the way for new research that might reveal whether blueberries could be used in the future in treatments to boost development of bone mass and to help prevent osteoporosis. Very cool, and published in the Journal of Bone and Mineral Research back in 2010. This is now making a resurgence in the news because people are interested in it, of course. The investigation showed that animals fed rations that contained 10% freeze-dried blueberry powder had significantly more bone mass than their counterparts whose rations were blueberry-free. When the researchers exposed laboratory cultures of bone-forming cells, which are called osteoblasts, to blood serum, from the animals, the scientists found that the serum from the blueberry-fed rats was associated with an increase in development of osteoblasts into mature, functional bone cells. Serum in the blueberry-fed rats was high in phenolic acids derived from the color-impacting polyphenols. Now, the research suggests that the phenolic acids may have had bone-building effects in the rats. Studies are needed to determine whether these benefits occur in humans, of course, Chen noted. Chen's research also suggests that the phenolic acids stimulated bone building via a pathway that may involve, for example, two genes, TCF and LEF, and a protein, beta-catenin. Beta-catenin is responsible for prompting osteoblasts to become mature and functional, while TCF and LEF are responsible for promoting synthesis of beta-catenin. And in more rat news, giant rats, something you might not want to be thinking about, but they are helping us with tuberculosis. One African species can sniff out the disease. In December, scientists reported on a possible new tool that could help in the fight against tuberculosis, or TB, a highly contagious lung disease. With treatment, tuberculosis is preventable and curable. Without treatment, the disease can be fatal. A new tool to keep tuberculosis at bay is good news. And in this case, the good news comes with a twist. It might cost a lot of bananas. No, we're not talking about primates here. We're talking about rats. The new tool is an animal called the African giant rat. As their name implies, these rats are native to Africa and grow to be large, reaching 30 inches or longer, the same size as raccoons. How'd you like that showing up in your backyard looking in your trash can? Now, in the lab, the animals identified cases of tuberculosis, including many that were missed by the usual tests. The secret to the rat's success is their keen sense of smell. According to Alan Poling, who worked on the study published in December, a giant rat can be trained to sniff tuberculosis. Poling is an expert in animal learning at Western Michigan University in Kalamazoo. The researchers used only animals that have been raised in captivity. He recommends against going out and trapping your own TB detector, by the way. In the wild, they're really nasty. I think we all know that if you've ever encountered a wood rat, he told Science News. Now, to find tuberculosis, researchers look at samples of sputum, yes, ew, under a microscope. Sputum is the goop that sick people cough up and spit out of their mouths, in case you didn't know. That's why I said ew. Now, to train the rats to find the TB, Poling and his team placed the sputum samples beneath holes in the rat's cages. When a rat paused over a sample with TB, it received a bite of banana. If the animal paused over a sample that did not have TB, it received no banana. It took 5 or 6 months to train the rats, and they also used the Gambian pouched rat as well. Now, the animals were eventually able to test a dozen sputum samples in about a minute, Poling told the Science News. And Poling and his team used microscopes to study the sputum of more than 10,000 people from Tanzania, a country in the southeastern part of Africa. The scientists discovered TB in 1,400 people, and then gave the rats a turn. The rats also found TB, including more than 90% of the cases identified by the human researchers, but the rats also found more. The rats identified another 1,400 people with TB, though not all of those turned out to be accurate. When the scientists checked check the rats' results, they found that 620 of the people did in fact have the disease. That result may seem like rats smell tuberculosis even when it doesn't show up under the microscope. Polling says that it doesn't mean that the TB is there, it just might be in such small amounts that it's invisible to microscopes. Rats might be better TB sniffers than the microscope indicates. We're thinking that in at least some of the people, there are bacteria present that our people using microscopes didn't see, Polling said, and there might be low concentrations. All right. Now, the rats need to be more accurate before they can be trusted to diagnose TB, but this study is a promising first step. In September in 2010, a different team of researchers introduced another new test that is based on DNA. That test is now being tested. And now back in 2009, tuberculosis killed about 4,700 people each day, according to the World Health Organization. That's a very big number, all right? You know, we have done a lot of reports on malaria, but let's take a look at TB. It's not eradicated. And this can really be a helpful tool in pre-diagnosing people. Most fatal cases of tuberculosis occur in developing countries, of course, and that's where people cannot often afford or don't have access to the treatments that could stop or cure tuberculosis. And more interesting factoids about rats in the news of science. Half-asleep rats look wide awake. They do. You would never know, right? Parts of the brain can doze off while an animal remains active. Sounds like some people I've worked with in my past. Some parts of a rat's brain can fall asleep even when the animal plays and seems wide awake, a new study shows. Researchers at the University of Wisconsin-Madison and their colleagues in Italy kept rats up 4 hours past the rodent's usual bedtime. Even though the rats stayed awake, electrodes implanted in their brains showed that some brain cells went to sleep while neighboring ones remained active, the teams reported in the April 28th issue of Nature, so you can look that up if you want to see more. Rats with sleeping neurons were also prone to making mistakes during slightly difficult tasks. Well, there's a big news flash. When you're half asleep, you're half asleep, a finding that may have implications for sleep-deprived people. And it would be very insidious because nobody would be able to tell if there's anything wrong with you, says Giulio Tononi, the University of Wisconsin neuroscientist who led the work. The rats in the study weren't staring off into the void or anything, unquote, he says. Now, the findings add to a growing body of evidence that sleep doesn't necessarily involve the whole brain at one time. Okay. Now, many scientists previously thought that a central control center determined when the brain sleeps and wakes, but the researchers have been building a case for the past two decades that sleep may originate in a single in single cells and eventually spread all over the brain. As far as the researchers could tell, the rats were fully awake and playing with objects the researchers had supplied to keep the animals up past their bedtimes. Only the electrodes implanted in two parts of the brain recorded the neuron naps. But just because the rats weren't nodding off doesn't mean their brains were working well. The team tested the sleep-deprived rats' ability to reach through a plexiglass wall and grasp a sugar cube. Now, the task involves some coordinated moves, such as rotating the wrist, that aren't part of the rat's normal repertoire. So if the animal's brains aren't firing on all cylinders, the grab could fail. When brain cells in the motor cortex, the part of the brain that controls movement, fell asleep, rats failed in attempts to grab those sugar cubes for several hundred milliseconds afterward. Now, the sleeping neurons in the parietal cortex, which is not involved in the test, did not lead to the mistakes. They did determine that. Now, if the finding applies to people, it could mean that lost sleep is even more dangerous than previously believed, leading to slips of the tongue, driving mistakes, errors of judgment, or other problems. So many humans are walking around with a sleep debt, says Christopher Caldwell, a neuroscientist at UCLA, and quote, "This is probably part of the everyday situation for a lot of people," unquote, and boy, do we know that all too well. So get your sleep. Don't walk around half awake. It could improve your quality of life, if anything, with these rats is applied to humans. And now we see that rats can help us in implications regarding our sleep, sleep patterns, and amount of sleep in our brain activity. Let's take a look at eating. Fats stimulate binge eating? Well, rat studies that are going on right now suggest strategy for combating the munchies. Eating fatty foods may give you the munchies. Well, yeah, I think we know this. A new study shows that when rats taste fat, it stimulates the same cellular buttons triggered by the active ingredient in marijuana, telling the body to keep on eating. Uncovering the events that lead to this molecular eat-eat missive will make it easier to develop drugs that curb binge eating and other weight-related problems, says pharmacologist Danielle Piumoli, who led the work. Now, Piumoli and his colleagues were interested in compounds known as endocannabinoids, the body's version of the active ingredient in marijuana, and the role they play in overeating. Several kinds of endocannabinoids are released in the brain and body, but researchers are still discovering the nitty-gritty of where and when these compounds regulate mood and behavior. So the researchers fed rats one of four liquid diets: fat in the form of corn oil, protein, sugar, or a nutrition shake combination of fat, protein, and sugar. to ensure that the body's digestive signals wouldn't interfere with the experiments, a surgically implanted valve in the rat's upper stomach drained the food once eaten. Then the team measured endocannabinoid activity in the brain and other tissues. Compared with rats eating sugar or protein alone, rats on the fat diet had a surge of endocannabinoid activity in their gut. The team reported online July 5th issue of Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. Previous work has linked endocannabinoid activity to binging, and when given a compound that blocked those cellular buttons that the endocannabinoids typically hit, the fat-eating rats immediately stopped eating. It was a very striking effect, says Piumoli of the University of California, Irvine, and the Italian Institute of Technology in Genoa, Italy. That a feedback loop in animals encourages binging on fats makes sense, says Angelo Izzo of the University of Naples Federico II in Italy, who, by the way, was not involved in the work. From an evolutionary point of view, fats were once a valuable, rare commodity that played a pivotal role in survival. But the new research is exciting because it suggests blocking endocannabinoid activity in the gut might curb overeating, says Izzo. A drug designed to do just that turned out to also interfere with endocannabinoid activity in the brain, making some people anxious and irritable. Uh-oh. But in the new work, the fat-triggered activity was localized to the gut. Piumoli's team hopes to generate new drugs that wouldn't enter the brain, so we'll keep you up on that. And what are all these rat stories building up to? It's building up to the special presentation of 3 Skeleton Key, one of the most requested old-time radio shows ever, and it was originally broadcast on Escape. It's a classic horror tale about rats, narrated by Vincent Price, first made famous by Escape. This radio play was then broadcast 2 more times on Suspense after Escape went off the air, based on a 1937 Esquire magazine short story by the French writer Georges Toulouse. The story was adapted for Escape in 1949 by James Poe. 3 Skeleton Key is set off the coast of French Guiana in South America. This is a coastline that's also famous for the penal colony on Devil's Island. Now, quite a bit of information about 3 Skeleton Key is available on the internet. You can read more about it at the One Act Virtual Museum. The One Act players have posted Toulouse's original story, and there's also a detailed article by B.A. Peterson at horrorwood.com. So without much further ado, Rats, Vincent Price, and A Lonely Night House. This episode is a classic of vintage radio.
Tired of the everyday routine? Ever dream of a life of romantic adventure? Want to get away from it all?
We offer you Escape! Escape, designed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure.
Tonight we escape to a lonely lighthouse off the steaming jungle coast of French Guiana, and a nightmare world of terror and violence, as Georges Toulouse describes it in his hair-raising tale, 3 Skeleton Key.
this place. A gray tapering cylinder, welded by iron rods and concrete to the key itself. A bare black rock, 150 feet long, maybe 40 wide. That's at low tide. At high tide, just the light, rising 110 feet straight up out of the ocean. And all about it, the churning water. Gray-green, scum-dappled, warm as soup, and swarming with gigantic bat-like devilfish, great violet schools of Portuguese man-o-war, and, yes, sharks. The big ones, the 15-footers. And as if this wasn't enough, there was a hot, dank, rotten-smelling wind that came at us day and night off the jungle swamps of the mainland. A wind that smelled like death. Set in the base of the light was a watertight bronze door. And in you went, and up. Yes, up, and round and round, past the tanks of oil and the coils of rope, cases of wicks, racks of lanterns, sacks of spuds, and cartons and cans, and up, and up, and up, round and round. Over the light storeroom was the food storeroom, and over the food storeroom was the bunk room where the three of us slept, and over the bunk room was the living and cooking room, and over the living and cooking room was the light. She was a beauty, balanced like a ballerina on the glistening steel axle of her rotary mechanism. At night, you'd lie there on the stone deck of the gallery with the light revolving smoothly and quietly over your head, easing her bright white eye 360 degrees around the horizon. You'd lie there watching to see that the feeders kept working, that everything ran right. It wouldn't be bad. The other two fellows snoring in their sacks two levels down. You'd smoke your pipe to kill the stink of the wind. And it wouldn't be bad. About those other two, Louis and Auguste, what a pair. Louis, he was head man, was a big fellow from the Basque country. Black beard, little hard black eyes, and a pair of arms that, I tell you, those arms were as big around as my legs. Yes, head man he was, and what word he let go was law. Silent fellow, and although I spent my first 2 weeks trying to strike up a real conversation, the most I could ever get out of him was...
I took up this profession because I don't like people. They talk too much. It's quiet work, light tending. Let's keep it that way. You're getting to be as bad as August. I thought maybe for once they'd send me somebody...
That was Louis. And when he accused me of becoming like August, I quieted down, because August was the talkingest man I've ever met. The talkingest and the ugliest. He was hunchbacked, stood 4 feet high, had red hair and big blue eyes. It seems he'd been an actor in Paris.
Over 200 different productions, dear boy, at the Grand Guignol. Oh, but it was monstrous, horrible, the way we used to scare the audience. I was hated. Yes, yes, they used to throw things and hiss and bare their teeth at me. Finally, it got too bad. I couldn't stand it any longer. I gave up the theater. My nerves, you understand. Yes, gave it up completely. I really did. I couldn't.
It all started one morning at 2:30. I was on watch, lying on the cool stone deck, pulling on my pipe, staring out at the blackness, the phosphorescent combers and the big yellow stars, when, out of the corner of my eye, I noticed something show up for a second, something the light had touched, far off. I waited for her to come around again, and when she did, there it was. Three-master, a big one, about a half mile off, and coming down out of the north-northwest, coming straight for us. You must understand, our light was where it was for a very good reason. Dangerous submerged reefs surrounded us, and ships kept clear. But this one, This sailing vessel was coming straight on. I went over to the gallery door and yelled down.
Louis! Louis!
What is it?
Ship! Headed for the reefs!
I'm coming,
I had the glasses out now. I couldn't read her name, but I could see her quite plainly. All sails set, the foam creaming away under her bow, her beautiful lines. A Dutch ship, I guessed her. Why didn't she turn? Every time it passed, our light hit her with the glare of day.
Ship? Where?
North-northwest. The light will touch her in a moment.
Can't she see us?
Look at her. She just keeps coming on.
The square heads.
What is it?
Watch. North-northwest.
I know what it is.
What?
The Dutchman, the Flying Dutchman. We did a play about her once. Oh, what a performance. You ghastly galleon, hag-ridden, curse-driven.
Shut up, will you? Yeah, she's luffing.
Yes.
It's a sloppy way to come about. She's derelict, that's it.
Derelict?
Abandoned. Crew left her for some reason or another. But instead of sinking, she's gone on, running before every wind.
She'll not run long. Not with these reefs to break her up.
A beautiful ship. Now, why would men leave a beautiful ship like that?
She didn't ram us, although we all expected it. But as we waited for the crash, she luffed again, caught some odd gust and went about. We watched her the rest of those black hours, heeling and rocking, pushed and pulled by every stray wind, every freak current. Watched her until the dawn came, till the sea turned from black to pearly gray. And on she came again, heading for us. We all had our glasses trained on her now.
August, you can kill the light.
Right, Chief.
She doesn't look so good by daylight. Think she'll ground this time? I say, do you think she'll ground this time?
This is impossible. Absolutely impossible.
What?
Here, take my glasses. They're better than yours.
All right. What is it, your... I had to focus. And then... my breath froze in my throat. The decks were swarming with a dark brown carpet that looked like a gigantic fungus, but undulating. And on the masts and yards, the guys and all, were hundreds, no thousands, no millions. I don't know. An inestimable number of tremendous rats.
See them?
Yes, I see them.
Now we know why she's derelict.
Yes, now we know.
What are you two doing? Here, give me a look.
Yes, give him the glasses. Take a good look, chatterbox. Give you something to talk about.
She's still heading for us.
Yes.
If she's going to turn, she'd better turn soon.
Suppose she doesn't.
You mean suppose she piles up on the quay?
It's low tide.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Well, where's all the conversation, August? Huh? Here, you want the glasses again? You want another look?
No.
She's still coming on.
Go away! Go away!
Turn, will you? Turn, I say! I pray you turn. Cracked up.
The rats! Look! On the water! Like a carpet!
They're swimming.
Sure, they're swimming. Those are ship rats.
But they're swimming for the rocks.
The door below! It's open!
Well, come on!
And down we went, racing down the stone stairs, taking them three and four at a time. Scared? You bet we were scared.
August, you get the windows. Maybe they can climb. We don't know.
Right, Chief. But hurry. Hurry.
Look. You see them?
No. Oh, yes, I do. Up at the other end of the rock.
Look at them.
Millions.
They smell us. Here they come. Well, close the door.
I can't. It's stuck.
Here, let me.
Move, you.
Made it.
Holy, that was close.
One got in. Look, there.
Well, get him.
Watch it. Kick him.
What a brute.
He was as big as a tomcat. Bigger. And his eyes were wild and red. His teeth long and sharp and yellow. He went for us. Starving, ravenous. And we fought him. Fought that one rat all over the room. It was... Oh, believe me, I don't exaggerate. It was like fighting a panther.
I got it.
We'd better get aloft.
Yeah.
As we ran up the winding staircase, we passed the tiny windows of the various levels. And at every one was a thick, wriggling, screaming curtain of brown fur. I was ahead of Louis, and I dreaded each successive level. Suppose they had found a way in.
Look at them! Oh, you look at them!
It's a nightmare.
Will you look at them?
The air of the gallery was thick and fetid with the stink of them. The light was dim, brown, filtered through the crawling mass that swarmed over the glass, all about us. We couldn't see the sky. Nothing. Nothing but them. Their red eyes, their claws, their wriggling hairy snouts, and their teeth. The rats. They screamed and howled and threw themselves against the glass. They were starving. And we three, we stood very quietly. Oh, very, very quietly. In the center of the glass room. Under our beautiful light. And we waited.
What can we do? What can we do, Chief?
Take it easy. Take it easy.
I can't. Just can't.
Won't do any good to... It won't do any good to stand here and shake.
That's right.
Go away! Go away, do you hear me? Go away, Mr.
They won't go away. Not until...
Finish it, Chief. Not until... What?
Not until they've been fed.
You can take just so much horror, and then you get used to it. And they were interesting to watch, you know. They couldn't understand the glass. They could see us, and they could rush at us. But that thin, invisible barrier held them off, stopped them. From time to time, we caught a glimpse of the rocks below. More rats down there. Swarming brown velvet in the bright tropical sunlight. And then the tide began to rise. Only it had drowned some of them.
Ship's rats don't drown. No, sir. You can't drown one of them. They're all climbing up the tower.
This bunch around us is getting thicker.
Say, what's the time?
6:15.
You've got first watch, Sean.
Right.
Wake me at 10.
I will.
Come along, August.
It was getting dark. One side of the room was lit a soft, filtered red. Sunset through the rats. Oh, very pretty. I set the wicks, checked my fuel, and then lit the lamp. It caught them, lit them in their gigantic wriggling web of pale, hairless bellies, twitching red tails, bright eyes. And then I started the rotary motor. The light drove them mad. As she swung slowly and smoothly about, she blinded them in the fierce, stabbing bar of light, moving continually about, ever turning, ever touching, ever moving around and around. And they, twitching and shuddering, eyes flaming when they were struck by the light, the bright light moving. And behind, on the dark side of the room, so close, I dared not turn my back. But you can't help turning your back when you're in a room made of glass. On the dark side of the room, you couldn't see them, but only their eyes. Thousands of points of blank red light, blinking and twinkling like the stars of hell. And when I came up into the gallery early the next morning, there stood Auguste, his back to me. He was bowing to the rats, waving his arms and making a speech.
Dear audience, I am going to play once again that magnificent role which made me the toast of the Paris Theater. Prelati, the evil genius of the medieval underworld. I am he who did guide the dark soul of Marischal into the nether.
I stood staring at him, horror-struck. But he didn't notice me. The man had gone mad. He kept turning, telling his stories to all the rats, leaving no one out.
August! August!
Another one, the late comer. Take a seat on the aisle, dear patron.
Oh, stop it.
Giseray, the blood-stained monster, was my partner in iniquity.
He went on, bowing and scraping to the rats, his big blue eyes rolling and winking, his wild red hair waving about him. I grabbed him by the arms and slapped his face. He looked at me like a child, and then his face screwed up. He looked as though he were about to cry. Go below. Go on.
Oh, very well, then. Later, my dear audience, later. Matinee today.
Sure, he was crazy. But I guess we all were. A few hours later, he came back up and caught Louis and me teasing the rats. Yes, sounds horrible. It was fun. We would get right up against the glass and make faces at them. It drove them crazy. They would scratch away, trying to get at our eyes. Louis was even cuter about it. He'd pull a piece of bread out of his pocket and press it against the glass. The rats would scramble into a solid ball, biting each other, clustering like grapes. From time to time, a whole knot of them would slip and fall 110 feet to the surf below.
Look! Look at the sharks.
They're eating them.
Those sharks are our friends. Here, I'll get another bunch together. Here, my beauties. That's it. Pile up. Kill each other, huh? There they go.
Auguste joined in, too. Very ingenious, Auguste. He learned that if he spread-eagled himself against the glass, they'd bunch and bundle against his figure. Then he'd leap back.
Look! My portrait in rats!
It went on all day. And then I was lying in bed. It was about midnight. I was very tired and I was just beginning to fall off to sleep when I became conscious of a new sound. I couldn't figure it at first. I got up, lit the lamp, and went to the window. Even as I looked out, I saw one of the panes begin to sag in. They had eaten the wood away. Louis, come quick!
What? What is it?
They found a way in! I held the glass with my hand. Now they were all going crazy, and assured of the success of this maneuver, were all nibbling away at the wood. Louis ran below and then returned with a large sheet of tin. We spread it against the window and hammered it into place. Even as we did so, we felt the heavy bodies thudding against the other side as the window gave way.
There! That ought to hold. If it doesn't, we're done for.
Rats can't eat tin.
No, they can't. But what was that?
I don't know.
Came from below.
The storeroom window.
They're in. They're swarming up the stairs.
Drop the trap!
Right!
Yeah. Two of them got in.
Let's go after them.
We didn't have to go after them. They came at us. I leaped to one side and grabbed a marlin spike, swung, and smashed one in midair.
No!
I whirled to see Louis with the other. It had ripped his hand open and the blood was pouring out. He held his hand aloft and kicked at the snarling rat. I stepped and swung and got him.
Oh, my hands! He got my hands!
That's both of them, Louis. I'll get you something to tie that up.
Blood! Look at it! My blood! I'm bleeding!
Don't worry about it, Louis. Here! I'll wind this kerchief around it. It'll be okay.
Blood.
There, that's not bad. Just the flesh. And then I became conscious of a new sound. They were gnawing their way through the wooden trap door. I watched the wood. Fascinated. And even as I did, it began to give way. And a bristling, whiskery nose showed through. Louis! We've got to go up!
Uh,
The next level was the living quarters and kitchen. I slammed the trap there, but it too was wood.
Oh, my blood. What are we going to do?
I don't know. They'll be through this one in a minute.
To the gallery. The trap door in the gallery is metal.
Good. Come on. We made it. We lay across the trap door, exhausted, while below us the rats took over the entire tower. I could hear them howling and fighting over our food supply, our water, our leather. And all about us, the others screamed and glared in at us, swayed in a tangled mass, hypnotized by the ever-turning light. By morning, the air in the little room was horrible. Until now, we'd been getting air from the tower below. Now that was sealed off, and so was all our food and water. We lay exhausted, panting, waiting, waiting, and the hours crawled on. I was almost dozing from fatigue when I saw a sight that brought me too fast.
Would you like to come in, my beauties? Would you? I hold the powers of life and death, and I can let you in, you know.
August was standing by the glass, and in one hand he held a big wrench. He was tapping the glass gently, not quite hard enough to break it. I eased myself to my feet, and slowly, very slowly, tiptoed toward him.
All I have to do is tap just a little harder, and...
I found a coil of wire in the toolkit, and I trussed him up, fastened him to a stanchion in the center of the room. Louis was of no help. He lay on his side, looking at his bloody hand, weak and sick as a baby. So there I was, a lunatic and a coward for company. And all about, watching our little drama, the rats. The day dragged by. The supply boat wasn't due for another 12 days. I don't know what they could have done if they had come. And we had only one way of summoning them. That was to shoot off distress rockets. But the rockets were four floors below. And even if they'd been right there in the gallery, I couldn't have opened a window to fire them. That night, I tended the light, but its flame was devouring our oxygen. The following day, we lay thirst-tormented, starving, waiting. And the following night, I again tended the light. But the small supply of spare wicking we kept in the gallery had become exhausted. And quite suddenly, at about midnight, the light went out. There was nothing I could do. Wicks were stored three levels below. Nothing I could do. Nothing. From time to time, I'd strike a match to see the clock. And when I did, it lit up the million red eyes about us. All about. Watching. Waiting. Below, it had grown quiet. They'd cleaned us out, and now they, too, were waiting. All waiting. Then, the rats, quite suddenly, were silent. And then I heard it. And then I saw the sky and the stars. The rats were gone. I went to the glass. Out there on the water, a small freighter, a banana boat, showing a few lights, came softly and innocently towards us. Our light was out. They didn't know. I wanted to open the windows, to call out to them, to warn them somehow. But I was afraid. What if the rats were hiding from me, tricking me? So I waited. She grounded very softly on a reef not 200 yards from the quay.
grounded so gently that the man playing the cornet, was he a passenger, crewman, off watch, didn't even stop playing. They tried washing her back off. I could have told them to save their fuel. The tide was rising, would have floated her free. And I waited. That's all. That's the story. The sun came up, and there wasn't a rat on the whole quay. Every last one of that terrible army had left us, gone back to sea on their new ship. August, insane asylum. He never recovered. And Louis? They took him into Cayenne, where he died of blood poisoning from his bite. Yes, that's the whole of it. And if you'll excuse me now, I must go set my traps. No, mouse traps. No rats in this lighthouse. I should say not. Life in the lights isn't bad. But sometimes, when I see a strange vessel approaching, I get a little nervous. Sure. Somewhere on the seas, there's a little banana boat without a crew. That is, without a human crew.
Escape is produced and directed by William N. Robeson. Tonight we have presented Three Skeleton Key by George Toudouse, adapted for radio by James Poe. Featured in the cast were Elliot Reed as Jean, Bill Conrad as Louis, and Harry Bartell as Auguste. Special music was arranged and conducted by Adele Castillo. Next week.
You are standing on the deck of a ship headed on an illegal mission to Central America. Before you, holding a gun in your stomach, is a desperate man who has just given you the choice between being killed or becoming a murderer yourself.
Next week, we escape with John and Gwen Bagney's exciting tale of a murderous trio of gunrunners in Central America, Maracas. Goodbye, then, until the same time next week, when once again we offer you Escape. Stay tuned now for Life with Luigi, which follows over most of these CBS stations. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Ah, rats, it's that time again already. The time for Savage Science Radio to end for this week? Yes, it is. I'd like to thank Nick Palugo for the fantastic show graphics, Nick Bunn and Hawk Productions for that wonderful intro that I use every single week to keep us revved up and ready to go, while Lead Al-Haddad, who helps me find really intriguing and provoking articles to bring to you that'll keep you awake so you're not a half-asleep rat. And Todd Sheets, the magic man behind the controls at Jackalope 105 FM, my executive producer. And I would like to wish you all a great week. Keep your powder in your pants dry, and happy trails to you until we meet again.